Welcome. This is Coast to Coast AM. I am your host, Jimmy Church. We are coming to you live from the Coast to Coast World Headquarters right here in Los Angeles, California, the day after Thanksgiving. All right. It's going to be a great night tonight. And I hope that all of you spent time with your family, friends, yesterday on Thanksgiving, and now you're going to spend it with us right here tonight on Coast to Coast. And I want to jump off and say that, you know, tonight's guest is Alfred Weber, and I have been a fan of Alfred's for quite a long time. And tonight, we're going to take a tour through the new science of the Omniverse, his new book, its spiritual and physical dimensions, and its unmeasurable amounts of intelligent civilizations that are out there, not only in our galaxy, but this universe of ours. The book is incredible. I have it here in the studio. I've been reading it all week. And Alfred, he is one of the world's leading figures in exopolitics. We're going to talk about that tonight, too, as well. He's the international director of the Institute for Cooperation in Space. We're going to talk about that. But we're going to jump into all of my favorite subjects that I just love to talk about and learn about. I'm talking about time travel. I'm talking about the colony on Mars, interdimensional beings, advanced alien technology. Tonight, we're going to jump in feet first with Alfred Weber. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. I'm sitting in for George Norrie tonight. And he's at home with family, and tonight it's Dan and I and G here in the studio. It's going to be a great night tonight. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. Alfred Weber, when we come back, right after this. Welcome back to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church, sitting in tonight for George Norrie. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody, and let's get straight to it. I'm excited. Alfred Weber is one of the leading experts in exopolitics and is the international director of the Institute for Cooperation in Space. He has worked as a futurist at the Stanford Research Institute and in 1977 designed a proposed Carter White House extraterrestrial communication study. As the chairman of the board of advisors of the Mars Anomaly Research Society, he has championed the cause to have the United States government disclose its secret documents pertaining to Mars. His new book is The Omniverse, Transdimensional Intelligence, Time Travel, the Afterlife, and the Secret Colony on Mars. And I would like to welcome to Coast, Mr. Alfred Weber. Alfred, how are you on this Thanksgiving post-celebration?
Jimmy, I'm great. And it's a really clear, crisp night in Vancouver, Canada. And I want to wish Thanksgiving wishes to you and to all of the listening audience, and also to my dear colleague, Dr. Cal Rosin, who is the director of the Institute for Cooperation in Space. I was the international director for the Institute for Cooperation in Space for a long time, and we championed the Space Preservation Treaty. U.S. Congressman Dennis Kucinich introduced it into the House of Representatives of the U.S. Congress, and we had presidents around the world, notably the president of Ecuador, who wanted to pull together a treaty conference in South America, bringing together all of the countries of the planet, including China and Russia, who want to ban space-based weapons. It's the same thing as we did at the treaty conference for the landmines. And that has had many, many spinoffs, including a local city council in California that now has adopted the Space Preservation Act, H.R. 2977, which prohibits HAARP and other weapons from beaming remote electromagnetic influencing down into their city. So we've had all sorts of effects over this decade.
Well, let me jump in for a second, Alfred, and for our audience, because I've been a fan of yours like forever. Let's back up for a second, because with your experience with the EPA out of New York, experience as a lawyer and an attorney, exopolitics came forward for you, and you helped coin the term. But let's kind of start there before we jump into the omniverse. And what is a clean and clear definition of exopolitics, and why is it so important to our audience?
Very good question, and thank you. By the way, exopolitics was nominated for Word of the Year of 2005, and not bad for a word that was coined only 5 years earlier in 2001 with the publication of my book, Exopolitics. But a very brief definition of exopolitics, and exopolitics is a social science like anthropology, and it's in its infancy now, so there are many definitions. The one that I prefer is exopolitics is the study of relations among intelligent civilizations in the multiverse. Now, what the multiverse means is the collection of all of the universes that exist. And the multiverse was a term that was coined notably by the American philosopher, psychologist, and novelist William James in 1895 to signify the totality of all the universes. And we can get in later into the definition of what a universe is, what a multiverse is, and what the latest scientific estimate is of the number of universes in the multiverse, which I think, to quote the scientists, it's, quote, humongous, end of quote.
Is it important for the UN to get involved, you know, to maybe have an exopolitics ambassador, if you will?
That's another key question. You know, you're really asking all of the key questions here. And the answer is yes and no. On the yes side, the answer is most definitely yes, because the way that our planet can relate to civilizations from other life-bearing planets or space-faring civilizations that might be based, say, in a space world of their own construction, or interdimensional civilizations, is from a planetary point of view. And when you deal from a planetary point of view, that's above the nation state. And so all of the treaties, all of the international treaties, like the 1967 UN Outer Space Treaty that you'll find, which, you know, 100 plus nations have signed and ratified, is basically the law of our solar system from the terrestrial point of view, actually the law of our cosmos from the terrestrial point of view, which the US is violating, but we'll get into that later. So you need the United Nations from that point of view. The no part is this, is that the fix is in until we get true United Nations reform. Because right now, the United Nations has what I would call an administrative bottleneck, and that's known as the Security Council, where you have the five founding members, only they were the members in a power relationship that was expressed in 1945.
That's right.
Now all of that has changed, and we're not a unipolar world, we're not a bipolar world, we're a multipolar world. So the problem with the UN is that the UK, which is this little island that's wagging a huge dog because of its queen that owns 26% of the land surface of the planet and has a huge underground, and some people say, shall we call it ritual demonic kind of persona? And, you know, that's proven. You've got the UK, the US, you've got Russia, you've got China, and you've got France. Now, you know, line them up now, those aren't exactly all the world's leading powers. I mean, BRICS will knock France out of the park, right?
That's right.
Any given day, and maybe even the UK. So What we're waiting for is for UN reform, which will begin to reflect our multipolar world, put more power into the General Assembly, so it's more, say, of a legislative body, one member, one vote. And I personally am a fan of direct digital democracy. If we can have the internet security, which we do have, that the U.S. fights its wars, where its drone operators are located in Tampa, Florida, and they're taking out, you know, targets in somewhere in the Middle East, there's a lot of security there. So what we can do is take that technology, swords into plowshares, turn it around so that everybody on the planet has a little device that they have, and at the municipal, at the provincial or state, at the national, at the international level, we don't need city councils anymore. We don't need state legislatures anymore. We don't need congresses anymore. We don't need United Nations anymore. The citizens of the world vote up and down on the laws, and then we have governments that are like, you know, city departments that pick up the garbage and keep the oceans clean. So that's, I think, the world that we're traveling toward. Hopefully it will be within my lifetime and yours, but all of that is technologically and politically feasible and reachable, and it's only what we call the matrix powers and the powers that be, and those people who have a vested interest in creating war, disease, crime, and poverty, which is their kind of gross world product, emphasis on gross, that we can transform this world. And what my book, The Omniverse, is about is nailing down in replicable scientific evidence with legal evidence as well, a model of the Omniverse to show that we on this planet, sure, we're on an impacted planet in an impacted sector of the galaxy. It's been that way for about 200,000 years, some people say a million years, but things can shift now and they're ready to flip. And we are now prepared as a society, and the Omniverse and knowledge of the Omniverse is part of the kind of the kindergarten to first grade lessons for all citizens to understand what civic duties are as we now prepare to enter organized universe society.
Well said. And we're going to get into the Omniverse right after the break, and we're going to go through the entire book. It's an amazing read. But I think to set it up, your first book, Exopolitics, they bleed into each other. And what I would like, I want to get inside your head for a second. When you wrote Exopolitics, what was it? There was an epiphany there, Alfred. Something snapped inside of you, and that light bulb went off. What was it that made you realize the need for Exopolitics?
Wow, you really know how to ask questions, Jimmy.
I do my best.
Thank you. I mean, this is really awesome. And there are a couple of levels that I would like to address the response to, because the Exopolitics is an unusual work. I've been told by a gentleman who was a CIA DARPA chrononaut. That means a time traveler. He's actually been a guest on Coast a number of times. He's a fellow attorney named Andrew D. Bishago. And Andy Bishago actually met me. I've known Andy face-to-face in person now for 15 years. We met in the year 2000. But Andy Bishago met me for the first time by proxy in the form of my book, Exopolitics, which he saw in 1971. And the reason he saw a physical copy of that book in 1971 was that he was a project participant in DARPA and CIA's Project Pegasus, which was their secret time travel and teleportation project. And One day he was taken aside, two other people, his father, who was kind of his handler, I would call it, or patron within the Project Pegasus, took him aside, opened up one of the briefcases that they hold what they call classified time travel materials. That is, materials where the U.S. CIA or DARPA had gone into the future, acquired materials from the future, and brought it back to the present, then 1971. And he plunked it out on a table, and there was a copy of Exopolitics by Alfred Lambert Weber. And so that was 1971. At the time, I was general counsel of the Environmental Protection Administration of the city of New York. Now, we know that our universe is a time-space hologram, and that's composed of multiple timelines. So let's take one of those timelines, and let's fast forward from 1971 up to 1999, where I'm sitting in my office. Jerry DiStefano Weber, PhD, my soulmate and spouse, and I had moved to Vancouver, Canada, and we were living in the Kitsilano area. And you asked the question, how did Exopolitics come about? Well, it was 1999, and I sat down and I wrote a couple of books very quickly, and then there was one book I knew that was being birthed. Now, if I think about it, who knows if I was not telepathically accessing the timeline in which Exopolitics had already been written and time traveled back to 1971, if you follow my drift.
That's interesting. Did you jump to that conclusion early on? That's an interesting revelation.
No, I had no idea. I remember sitting in my office there on York Avenue across from this beautiful red schoolhouse. I used to say, gee, this red schoolhouse is beautiful because all the kids used to come out at recreation and play, you know, games and stuff. And I said, I feel like I'm sort of teaching, you know, it was like a metaphor for teaching the earth the basics about Earth's position in the rest of universe society. So I had a great time with this. And what I did basically in writing the book Exopolitics was that I had gotten into this field in 1973, in January of 1973, because toward the end of 1972, when I was in the EPA, my boss, Mayor John Lindsay of New York, decided he wanted to run for U.S. president. And my immediate boss, Jerry Kretschmer, who was the EPA administrator, decided that he wanted to run for mayor of New York. So they were both getting into politics, and I really didn't want to go that way. And so I had begun reading books like Psychic Discoveries Behind the Iron Curtain, The Morning of the Magicians, and through my cousin, who was a therapist at the Karen Horn Eye Institute, I put out, you know, feelers, and I linked up with a gentleman, Philip H. Liss, Professor Philip H. Liss, PhD, who was an experimental psychologist and professor at Rutgers University. He was also an expert in parapsychology and in extraterrestrial affairs. So he and I met on the 7th of January, 1973, and we hit it off, and we formed an intellectual partnership. And I was a very quick study, and I then had about a 6 month, I left my job at the EPA. I jumped in, you know, full feet into the multidimensional world, and did a very, very quick study for about 6 months, both on parapsychology and on in the UFO ET area. At the time, we were, you know, going to conferences on the radio, meeting up with people like Yuri Geller, people like that, because that summer I wrote my first book. This is the summer of 73, which Bill Targ, who was the editor of G.P. Putnam's, bought and publishes The Age of Cataclysm.
Okay, well, let me jump in right there, Alfred. We'll pick it up on the backside. Tonight, Alfred Rubler is with us, and his book, The Omniverse, reveals the key travel and communication technologies of the Omniverse. Time travel, teleportation, and telepathy. I'm your host, Jimmy Church, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm your host, Jimmy Church, sitting in for George tonight. He's at home with his family, enjoying his Thanksgiving time off. Now, you can follow me on Twitter right now, at JChurchRadio. And I want to see who's smart. The theme of tonight's bumper music. Just post it right now, at JChurchRadio. Twitter is live to my left. And if you have any comments or questions for myself or Alfred Weber tonight and his new book, The Omniverse, I'll see it. It's live and it's real time. By the way, ParanormalDate.com has arrived. It was created by George Norrie and Mark Rawlings for the single person in the paranormal world. Now, I'm married, but if I wasn't, I'd be right there with the other 32,000 members. The site is now mobile optimized, and it's completely free to join. Check it out today. Just go to ParanormalDate.com. Use the promo code George. That's ParanormalDate.com. Tonight, it's Alfred Weber. His new book is Omniverse, Transdimensional Intelligence, Time Travel, Afterlife, and the Secret Colony on Mars. More with Alfred when we come back. This is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church, and tonight we have Alfred Weber, and his new book is The Omniverse, Transdimensional Intelligence, Time Travel, the Afterlife, and the Secret Colony on Mars. Now, Alfred, right before the break, we were working on the definition of exopolitics and how I feel that the two bleed completely together and function together right into the new book. And now we're at that stage. What is the Omniverse?
Right. Yeah. You know, actually, it turns out that the formula or the equation, you know, like E equals MC squared, it's so simple. It's just an utterly simple equation. You know, as time slows down, mass increases. Well, let's jump over to the Omniverse. The Omniverse equals the multiverse, in other words, all the universes of the multiverse, plus the spiritual dimensions. And the spiritual dimensions consist of the afterlife, or what we call the interlife, in other words, where you go between lives, and other spiritual dimensions within which are based the intelligent civilization of souls and spiritual beings and a defined source or God. Now, that clump there of the spiritual dimensions has been kept out of science since 3500 BC, when the Sumerians astronomers first said that what a universe is a discrete organic creation of time, energy, space, and matter. In other words, the universe encompasses all time, energy, space, and matter. But we're not going to bother about the intelligent civilization of souls, spiritual beings, the afterlife, God. All of that we're going to put in a really fuzzy ball that we call religion, that we call belief, and we have a bunch of guys in funny hats that make you on Sunday jump up and down and do all kind of crazy things around. But it turns out that the Omniverse is as scientific as the universe.
Of course it is.
We've been studying the universe and now string theory since William James came up with the multiverse in 1895, has been working overtime on super defining the multiverse, which is the totality of all universes encompassing all time, energy, space, and matter. But guess what? There's a huge, huge, huge amount of intelligence, life, creativity, and entities that are outside time, energy, space, and matter. And that's in the spiritual dimensions in terms of the intelligent committee of souls, spiritual beings, and source. And so that entire thing, which the Anunnaki, these are manipulatory, predatory, occupying ETs that are part of an ET matrix that has been occupying us from anywhere from between 200,000 and a million years. They came in and they said, we're going to take this, we're going to package it, and that's going to be religion, government, money, and God. And we're going to control that so that they worship us. So that's why it's all fuzzy around there. However, what the Omniverse does is that now what we have is we have both legal evidence, which is testimony, documentary evidence, and physical evidence. We have scientific evidence, which are uniform observational laboratory protocols and replicable results. And we now have things like multiple cases of hypnotic regression under standard uniform laboratory protocols of soul memories of the interlife, which is a perfectly standard scientific database on which to base our understanding of the structure, regularities, and dynamics of the spiritual dimensions, which are the interlife of the spiritual beings, which are a different category. They're a little bit different than the souls that we're part of.
Sure.
And of the original source. And because it turns out that we've been looking at the tail and thinking that it was the dog. In other words, the dog wags the tail.
That's right.
We've been saying, oh, the universe and the multiverse are the dog. And that's what science says. It's the be-all and the end-all. But in fact, it is, and we can prove this scientifically now, to certain levels of more probably than not. You know, it's not beyond a reasonable doubt, like when you go to execute a person in a criminal case in a jurisdiction where there's a death penalty, you want beyond a reasonable doubt. Right now, we're still at kind of the civil level of liability, which is more probably than not. But we can prove that more probably than not, it is the combination of Source God, the spiritual beings, and the collective of all of us souls. Our souls now, we know through replicable observational laboratory protocol derived knowledge, are holographic fragments of Source. And the basic principle of a hologram is that the whole is contained in each part of the hologram. And that what that means is that each of our souls is, let me emphasize, is God. It's not that we're like a little, you know, corner of God. We are God. Each of us is God. So that the collective of human souls, plus the spiritual beings, plus Source and God, is what creates the tail, i.e., our universe and all of the universes of the multiverse. And the universes of the multiverse have a mission. They're kind of our, I would call it our theme park that we create so we have a place to incarnate in for soul development and for creativity. And it's all very simple. It's kind of like E equals MC squared. It's the same. I watched a beautiful documentary on the life of Albert Einstein last night. And And it described his getting to, he was talking to his wife, and it described his getting to that really simple E equals MC squared. Well, the equivalent now is the omniverse equals the multiverse plus the spiritual dimensions.
Let me jump in here for a second, Alfred. The basic status quo when it came to science, up until, you know, the today, is that there is only one universe. That's it. There's nothing else out there. Let me finish really quick.
Okay.
And if I go, Jimmy Church, I go out to the edge of everything, right? Our universe. I go out to the edge and I get to the end and I poke my head out. I know what I'm going to see. I'm going to see another universe, right? If I look down, if I look up, there's going to be another one. And that is where we are at today. This single universe thing is completely thrown out, and it's almost impossible to look at things in those terms. Now, I want to back up to what you said there about the omniverse overlapping to the multiverse. The same omniverse concept here, interdimensionality, everything, all beings, afterlife, everything is as one. Now, does that duplicate over through ET and then to other universes through the multiverse?
I'm not quite sure I understand the totality of your question. But let me see if I can answer this way, and then if you want more clarification, please ask me. If we look at our universe is a holographic universe. And what that means, if you took out your credit card, let's say if you took out your credit card or your ATM card, your bank card, that has a hologram in it that's flat, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly, that flatness is exactly what our universe looks like from the outside. Now, if you're inside the hologram, like if you're inside the hologram on your credit card, you're going to see all those little sparklies, right? They vary. Some of them have their logos, some have different things. So if you're inside that hologram, you're going to be right next to this three-dimensional huge logo of Bank of America or Wells Fargo.
Right.
The same thing here. If you're on the outside of our universe, what you're going to see is this flat kind of strip. However, if you go inside of it, what you're going to see is what we see when we get on, when we go out to the night sky, or when we see photographs of the Milky Way, or of the deep space from the Hubble, of all these galaxies, or photographs of Mars, photographs of the solar system, because we're inside the hologram. Now, these universes, one of the hypotheses that we discovered in conjunction with writing this book, and I should add this, that Oxford University was involved in this, because what happened is that this book was born in July 2009 in Barcelona, Spain, where I was being interviewed by Ema Sanchez, who is a veteran reporter there for her newspaper La Vanguardia, which is the second largest newspaper in Spain. It'd be like the Washington Post or the LA Times, you know, compared to the New York Times. And they have like the complete back page of the first section, which they devote to visiting firemen or firewomen, you know, like if an author comes through town, right?
Right.
So we were there for the first European Exopolitics Summit in Barcelona. And they said, hey, and I was doing a book tour of Spain, for the Spanish edition of my book, Exopolitics. So I said, you know, Alfred, come on over. Ima Sanchez wants to interview you. And, you know, this is like the back page of the largest, second largest newspaper in Spain.
Yeah, of La Contra.
Yeah, yeah, yes. Exactly. And so I sit there, and she is really good. She really knows how to do it. And toward the end of the interview, she puts down her pen, you know. And we talked about life on Mars. We talked about all this stuff. And she puts down her pen, and she says very quietly, Alfred, tell me, how does the universe function? What's the relationship between extraterrestrials and reincarnation? You know, and that question really set me back, because I saw that she was getting at the key questions that many philosophers, psychologists, scientists, religious seekers, contactees,
all of us wonder that.
All of this have been trying to tell us over the ages. It's not just UFOs. It's just not ETs. It's just not reincarnation. It's all together in a single dimensional ecology of systems.
Sure.
Souls in the afterlife. You know, you go through a whole process there. We describe that in the book. It's not a matter of religion or faith there. We take all of the scientific studies and we put it in there. You get the most scientific, replicable view of what the interlife is. At a certain point, you're given a choice of a life. You know, you can actually sample lives, you know, like on TV screens, and you can say, hey, I'll take that one. I'll try out Alfred, okay? And so at a certain point, I consult with my guides, and they say, hey, you're going to be Alfred, or you're going to be Jimmy, or you're going to be XYZ. And then when you're ready, in a normal birth, you go through an interdimensional portal between the afterlife and you teleport. The two key technologies in the omniverse for intelligent civilizations are telepathy and teleportation and time travel. Now, time travel and teleportation are kind of interchangeable.
Sure.
Teleportation is time travel along a single timeline. That is, you don't change nows, but time travel is teleportation across timelines. In other words, I will teleport from 1895 to 2015.
Let me ask you really quick. We're going to be up against a break. I want to address what you had just said. When you go to the afterlife and you're choosing, or you're making a choice, or you're moving on, is that instantaneous after death? I mean, is there a time delay? Is it the next day, the next year, the next minute?
Really good question. The interlife or the afterlife is non-local and non-temporal, so you're outside of time. Time is a dimension of this created universe that we're in, and it's a universe of time, energy, space, and matter. Time is a dimension like space. In other words, we're inside, and we can be located by height, width, depth, and time. I'm located in Vancouver, Canada, at 22:54 p.m. Pacific time on Friday, November 27, 2015. That's my time-space coordinates.
Now, we're going to be up against a break here in just a second, so I want to get into this as quick as possible. You were saying that telepathy and time travel and teleportation were similar but different. Can you clarify that really quick as we lead into the break?
Teleportation and time travel are, in a way, the same technology. It's just that in time travel, you're crossing timelines, and in teleportation, you're just going from point A to point B, okay? And what happens is that when you incarnate, you go through an interdimensional portal between the interlife and our universe. You've been given, or you pick up, the time-space coordinates of your mother in a normal birth. You come up right up next to her womb about 3 months prior to birth, and then you integrate into the fetus in her womb.
Gotcha.
And that way, you and she become and trained in terms of heartbeat, in terms of organism, in terms of, you know, because your mother could have been your business partner in a private life, in a prior life. So there are all these complex things, and you've been put together for soul development, and the purposes of the universes, or one of the purposes, is for soul development. Now,
well, hold it right there. That's a perfect spot to take a break. Let's do that. Tonight, our guest is Alfred Weber. His new book is The Omniverse. And I'm going to ask Alfred, when we come back, this law of the universe, of the omniverse, does it apply to ET and all other species out there? I guess that is the question we all have. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. This is Coast to Coast AM. More with Alfred Weber right after this short break. Stay with us.